We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It's already busy on Airline Drive. Welcome in to New Orleans.football. Joining you live with Nick Underhill and Mike Triplett. I'm Brooke Kirchhoffer. Kai Harley and this Saints front office are wasting no time and chipping away at what is likely over $80 million in
Borough Hospital. They are the sponsor of our studio. And make sure you get every day started with PJ's Coffee. They got the best coffee in the whole entire city. And if you need a new car, check out my guy, Matt Bowers. Best prices, best car dealer in the whole entire universe. Out of there, into the vehicle of your dreams at the best price. So make sure you go and check him out. I vouch for him. That's my guy. And if you want the best Saints coverage, make sure you are signed up to New Orleans.football. I got too lazy to shut down our code, 2024, 25% off your first payment. If you hit that, it's probably still up because I'm too busy to get to it this week. So probably by the weekend. So make sure you hit that up before this weekend's game. And you'll have all the coverage for the offseason at 25% off. That code is 2024. All right, let's hit these ads. The New Orleans.football show is proudly presented by PJ's Coffee. PJ's Coffee has some of the best drinks that you can find. They have locations all over the city. They have pastries and everything else you need to get your day started. So go check them out. Are you looking for the perfect engagement ring? Look no further than Friend & Company Fine Jewelers' new engagement salon. This new area houses a wide selection of engagement rings to choose from in all cuts, sizes, and colors. Their experienced staff offer five-star customer care to help you find the perfect ring to express your love. Visit their new engagement salon today. Friend & Company Fine Jewelers, the perfect ring for the perfect moment and also for the perfect person. 7713 Maple Street between Adams and Burdett Street. 504-866-5433. Friend & Company Fine Jewelers. Check them out at friendandcompany.com. Moe's Barbecue is located in Metairie. They have your game day needs taken care of. Whether you're tailgating or watching the black and gold or LSU at home with friends, Moe's has you covered. Order pulled pork, wings, ribs, sides, and more. Come in with the family for lunch and dinner as our kids' meals will please even the pickiest of eaters. Tailgating, parties at home, lunch and dinner, Moe's Barbecue will handle it all. Moe's Original Barbecue, 1101 North Causeway Boulevard between 48th and 49th Street in Metairie. Call 504-407-5333 for your catering order today. 504-407-5333. Moe's Original Barbecue in Metairie. The holidays are a time for giving, and what better gift than the gift of relaxation? With a gift card to Woodhouse Day Spa, your loved ones can choose from a wide range of services to help them de-stress and rejuvenate. Visit their New Orleans, Metairie, Mandeville, Slidell, and Baton Rouge locations today, or visit their website to purchase a gift card and give the gift of relaxation this holiday season. Woodhouse Day Spa, where relaxation is a gift. Hard Hat Ponchatoula Strawberry Whiskey is an 86-proof blend of aged wheat bourbon, American light whiskey, and fresh Ponchatoula strawberries. Blended in New Orleans, it is not for the thin-skinned. Look for it in your favorite stores, bars, and restaurants. New Orleans Stop Football is proud to be sponsored by Firehouse Subs. Make sure you check out their location on Veterans Boulevard. All right, let's get into the show.
Let's get into our lead topic presented by Friend & Company Fine Jewelers, the official jewelers of the New Orleans Saints.
Friend & Company Fine Jewelers.
Wow. The tongue twister finally got me, finally caught up to me. They have a brand new engagement salon that is home to beautiful engagement rings. And while you're there, ask them about their collection of flirtily earrings and necklace that you see here. Holidays aren't over. Valentine's Day is around the corner. You got plenty of time to go get that before February. All right, let's get to our lead topic. Marshall Lattimore's contract was restructured. What does it say about the Saints' position right now as far as cap space in 2024? And also, what does it say about Marshall Lattimore's future with the Saints?
So, yeah, I mean, look, they're going to have to make a ton of moves to get under the cap. And it's going to take about $87 million just to get compliant. And then you got to make room to get open. So there's an element of just getting some stuff done. And there's about 12 moves they can make that are just really straightforward to get underneath the cap. If you just want to restructure everybody, you don't want to do pay cuts or anything like that. And Lattimore's one of the guys that was obviously on that list. Before doing this, he had a $25 million cap charge. But what's interesting to me, and nothing ever happens by mistake with the Saints, is that they did not do this as a signing bonus. They did it as an option bonus. And the option bonus is kind of rare. Like, you don't see it a lot. Russell Wilson had it. It kind of got popularized there. It works in the sense of it's the same as a signing bonus once it gets optioned and it gets picked up. It works the same way. It breaks down on your cap the same way. It's prorated. So if it's $20 million over 5 years, it's $4 million, $4 million, $4 million, $4 million on the cap. Works the same exact way. But until it's picked up, that money is not obligated to be paid by the Saints. So if you were to trade someone, say you do an option bonus and you set it for a week before the season and then you trade them, whereas with the signing bonus, you are on the hook for that money that's on your accounting and you've already paid it out. So you have to count for it on your books. So with Lattimore, it's like $11 million. So with the option bonus, and they set it a week before the season, if they trade them, the bonus goes to the other team. The other team pays for it. The other team goes on their salary cap. This was a deliberate decision by the Saints and by Lattimore because it's written into his contract, paragraph 7 on it, I believe, where they can just go in and do it as a signing bonus and you don't have to talk to anybody. You can go in and convert it to a roster bonus. You don't have to talk to anybody. You agree to it when you sign the contract. The option bonus is not on there, and it wouldn't be because it kind of screws the player a little bit in a way if he doesn't want to leave.
Makes them wait 6 more months for their bonus payment.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in a lot of these, they sign it, and it says they're going to get paid on the same schedule as their P5 base salary. So, like, they don't necessarily get the money up front. I thought the same thing, and I just read through it today. Gotcha. So it's kind of paid out the same way, but it does guarantee your money right away. But so with Lattimore, just kind of to make a long thing more simple, option bonus, not signing bonus. It's set for a week before the 2024 season starts. The only reason to do this is to leave the door open to a transaction to where you can move on from somebody. So with him at that $25 million, by not doing this, if they were to try to trade him or on June 2nd, which is probably where it would have to happen because it's like a $35 million cap hit, if you carry it till June 2nd on the previous setup, $25 million you have to keep on your books till then. As they're doing it right now, they cleared $11 million off. You have to carry $14 million until June 2nd. So this is basically the same type of deal as a Drew Brees retirement where you cut the base salary down to nothing and you hold him until June 2nd and he retires on June 2nd so you can split that payment. So in the case of Lattimore, it's about $35 million. So it'd be, you know, low teens next season and then 20-some million the year after that on the accounting on the book. So they would do it like that. The Mike Thomas deal last year, it was the same exact thing. They had to pay Mike $1 million so that they could lower his base salary all the way down and carry him until June 2nd. Then they made the decision to keep him. But that was set up to be, if they wanted to depart, they could have departed. Did the same thing with Lattimore. And the reason you do with the option bonus with him, you don't lose any of that money if you're Marshawn. You get every single dollar you were supposed to get. All of it comes together. It's all guaranteed, all that. It's just, he can be traded now. And based on some of the stuff that I've heard way behind the scenes, not surprised that this is something that like everybody's kind of open to at this point. So we'll see if it actually happens. But the table is set for a trade to be made.
Yeah, I mean, to boil that down, I mean, the things that you take away from it are, it's very similar to what the Saints always do. It's going to affect their salary cap the same way when they have to get under the cap in early March. But there's two giant alarm bells, which is they don't normally do this at this stage of the season. The last time they did something like this in week 17 was with Michael Thomas, and they were setting that up to leave open the flexibility of a departure. And just, yeah, the option bonus being something different than we're used to. They both scream, the player has agreed to this. Maybe even the player is incentivized to do this or asked for this or something like that. If this was the Saints wanting to set themselves up to have more flexibility with the player who didn't want to go anywhere, you know, he would resist. So the thing, you know, it makes me on guard to, are they going to be shopping Marshawn Lattimore? No one has confirmed that.
Yeah.
But it's impossible not to read that into this.
It'll be interesting, too, when Marshawn eventually comes back. Obviously, we are going to be at his locker the minute we see him back at practice, making sure we're getting like a temperature read. If we did, we would make sure that we would try to figure out, what is he looking like? Does he want to be around the building? The fact that he has not been around the building when we're there, he makes sure that that car is not in the parking lot, to me screams maybe he is leaning toward wanting to be out of here. And this just only confirms it with this move.
I did see him up there about a week ago. And like, I think he comes in for the meetings, gets his rehab and leaves before practice.
And then he's out of there.
Yeah. I mean, and it's kind of what a lot of guys that are hurt do, but I don't think we're going to see him again this year. I don't. I mean, everything I've heard says we are not going to see him again this year. If they somehow make the playoffs and they go on a run, maybe it changes. But like, I do not expect to see Marshawn Lattimore in that locker room again this season. Someone in the chat saying this would only help the cap. No, this is you're wrong. Like, no, this does not make it more expensive to move on from him. It makes it more possible to move on from him. That's the reason it was done. So do not misconstrue that.
Yeah,
like,
it's
not vested. You've taken $11 million that is not vested now. And if you had done it the other way, it would have been vested. Mm-hmm. So this makes it $11 million cheaper to move on from him.
The main takeaway is when you do this, these restructures that they do every single year in March, they're, like you say, they might not write the check at that moment, but they're paying the signing bonus. Like, we've now paid the player, and we're the ones paying it. By doing this and saying the option bonus isn't due till September, it means whatever team you're on in September will pay you this bonus.
Yeah.
That's the difference. If the Saints are the team he's on in September, they'll be the ones who pay the bonus.
This is if you want to put it a different way, this is an advertisement. This is a tweet. This is a signal to every GM that, like, hey, this guy, like, we might not be shopping them, but like, we're open to it. And that's what it is, because otherwise you just do the signing bonus. You get it done. You move on. You don't have to call them and have this conversation. Like, to call them and have this conversation, you're saying like, maybe, and you're risking the relationship. So I think it's probably a thing where that both sides just kind of understand where it's at. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, let's see what the options are. I'm not going to go so far to say that he's getting traded or he will be traded, or it's just that it's a possibility now. Whereas before this, I thought it was impossible, because it was just like, the finances didn't make any type of sense, and they found the move where it does kind of make a little bit of sense.
The finances would still hurt. I mean, if you trade Marshawn Lattimore, it's still a painful financial decision, because all the other dead money from his previous signing bonus, from his previous restructure, is still going to hit your books. So it's still not ideal to trade him. But we'll probably talk about this more in the future, but if you want to consider trading Marshawn Lattimore, he'd be the last guy, not the last guy, he'd be one of the last guys I'd want to trade. He's still young. He's still one of my best players, but he has value. Mm-hmm. He has value. So if the team is going to consider any kind of trade moves, you don't get a lot for Cam Jordan or DeMario Davis at this stage of their career, or Alvin Kamara with the mileage he has on him. Marshawn Lattimore is a guy who could bring you something back.
Oh, absolutely.
And he's a first round pick.
Yeah. I mean, I think so it would very much hurt to lose him, but, you know, he's somebody who's making an average of $20 million per year, and if you turn that into a draft pick, it would be a signal of this team heading in sort of a different mini-rebuilding direction, too, that we haven't seen from this team in a long time.
They've kind of gotten away with it a little bit, but do you think, like, the way some of these guys are playing creates a false sense of security where they're like, we can survive without them? Should they feel confident in what
they've
seen?
No, because I think some of the – this is – I was just about to make this point. I think some of the games are different if Marshawn Lattimore is up and available for some of these games. I think he
best
is
player on the team
that crucial to the team's success, and we've seen with him being out how it's affected that group. The secondary got exposed in LA. I think it would have been a different outcome in LA had Marshawn Lattimore been up. Now, they responded against the Buccaneers on the road, and credit to them, the guys in the secondary, all three cornerbacks that got involved in that game, did show out and did enough to win, but it's against an NFC South opponent, which, as we know, the NFC South has kind of been average this year. But no, Marshawn Lattimore, absolutely, it's a take away the cap and the financials. It is a huge loss for this Saints defense. And as you mentioned, it's a first round pick. You don't think Dan Campbell and some of these other coaches, Aaron Glenn, that have worked with him before, aren't noticing this and are already on the phones? Like, what do we got to do? Let's go ahead and put it in the works. I would imagine this is, like you said, it's kind of that alarm to other teams that, look, give us your best shot. Show us what you can provide for us. And maybe this starts to get the ball rolling without it being so much as, hey, we're done with you. We're putting it out there that we're done and we want to put you on the trade block. Like, I think this was probably the healthiest way to go about this, right?
Yeah, look, but like a lot of the stuff they do does happen on paper first because of the way their cap is. And it's it's on paper, like right now.
We always get these clues. Yeah. Wait a minute. That Malcolm Jenkins deal looks funny.
Yeah, it's like Malcolm, everybody that retires on paper first. Yeah. Every move they're going to make happens on paper first. It's just kind of where they're at and why they have to manage cap like that. But I think I agree with you. I think it's crazy, like in a vacuum, to get rid of this guy. I think he's the best player on the team. I think if we're being like brutally honest about what's on film, like he's lost a little bit of that elite athleticism. Like, I don't think he's still the same player he was in 18.
Like, well, he did say he felt like his training camp this year was the best it's ever been. So that's where I'm like, the injuries just keep pulling him back down. But he said he did feel the best he's had in his entire career back in August.
I just think there's a handful of plays where you see him cheating where he didn't cheat before. But, like, he's still elite. He's still, like, top tier, elite type player. And I don't think you get – like, I think cornerback's the hardest position to fill almost. Like, every team I've covered that hasn't had cornerbacks, it's always just – that's the – you can't hide from having bad corners. At some point, they get exposed, and you just can't really do anything about it. He's a difference maker. I mean, they change the way you play. They change the way you scheme, all that stuff. So getting rid of him, I think, is scary. But this wouldn't be the first time. Like, there was another time earlier on with him where they tried to move up in the draft, and it was pretty certain that they were trying to move on in that.
When they wanted J.C. Horn or Patrick Surtain. But that was before they paid him.
Yeah,
they wanted to avoid
paying. They missed, and then they had to pay him. Yeah. So, I mean, this wouldn't be that, you know, the first time that they've looked down this path at all. And look, I'll just say this. Like, last year, I think there was a feeling that it took a little too long to come back. And I think this year there's a feeling that it's taken a little bit too long to come back. And, you know, if there's a crux of an issue, that might be it.
And we also don't know if we don't know the impetus. We don't know if he's told them, that's it, I'm not coming back this year and I'd really like to be traded. Or if he said, I'm not coming back this year and they're like, we need to start thinking about trading this guy. But it does seem to be, for them to work out this deal, there seems to be mutual interest. And again, we use the Michael Thomas example from last year. On paper, they basically ended his contract, made him a free agent. Then after he had the chance to explore and they had the chance to explore, he came back. So that does not mean this is inevitable, it'll happen. But they have set the stage for all possibilities to be open. And look, we have talked and we are going to talk a lot about what direction this Saints team should head. He is, I think maybe Chris Olave is the only other better trade chip on this entire team when you consider age and contract. He is a valuable trade chip. If this team is going to consider in any way doing what so many people want him to do and sort of replenish for the future, Marshawn Lattimore is a very valuable chip in doing that. You could debate both sides of it. You really could.
Before we move on from this, I want to ask you guys, when a player's contract is coming together and it's a contract like Marshawn Lattimore's, how much are their agents fighting for some of those clauses that you're talking about that's already that they're trying to put in the contract for something like this to be an option?
So like the other ones, like as far as, and it's a weird, like it baffles my mind the way people frame them. They're like, the player did the team a contract by restructuring their base salary to a signing bonus. Like, no, he got his money guaranteed. Like the player is getting something out of this. And a lot of times they do get paid all the money up front and then it becomes guaranteed. And then what does that do to their base salary next year? When you add dead money to the books, it makes it a little bit harder to move on from them. And that isn't necessarily a hurdle for the Saints. So like, it doesn't just guarantee your money this year. It makes it harder to move on from your money next year. So it's a benefit to the player every single time someone wants to restructure your contract. But every time it happens, someone will be like, well, he would do this for the team. Like, he's doing it for his finances.
He's
getting paid and his money's guaranteed. So he just improved his situation. It's the furthest thing from a selfless move.
And this move today brought on a really great question for our question of the day. Martin's question of the day is a great one about the cap space and kind of forwarding the conversation. Martin's is home to a wide selection of hand-picked barrel select bourbon, whiskeys, and more. Martin's is so much more than just wine. All right, the question is, thinking about a potential Paulson Adebo extension got me thinking, if we can't cut our older players thanks to dead money, how do we deal with the cap problem in an older roster if not by letting some of the younger, soon-to-be more expensive guys go like Adebo?
Yeah, I kind of disagree with the premise. I don't believe in the concept that you can't cut an older player because of dead money. it does influence some of your decisions, but the worst mistake you can make is continuing to pay an older player more new money that he doesn't deserve anymore. And we don't see the Saints do that very often. What we will see the Saints do is maybe keep a Jameis Winston and an Andrus Peat like they did this year with pay cuts, because there's like a win-win. You're still on our books. We can finagle the money a little bit. But the Saints aren't going to just keep all their old players because they're so stuck. If they have to take on money, dead money, they'll take on dead money. So I think they would choose, they will make all these decisions based on who they want to pay and who they want on their roster. And if Marshawn Lattimore is potentially out of here, Paulson Adebo is absolutely invaluable to this team. So he is not a guy that you avoid. Look, they've made that decision before. They didn't pay Trey Hendrickson because they make every choice. We can only pay so many guys. He's a guy they chose not to pay to their detriment. But, it's always the football decisions are always about who do we want to pay money to be on our roster going forward. They won't keep the worst guy over the better guy and pay the worst guy over the better guy just because they don't know how to finagle the cap.
Yeah, Trey was a evaluation error. If they thought he was a good player, they would have paid him. Yeah. But, I mean, look, the thing is, as long as they're committed to the philosophy, like $30 million in dead money on an old guy, and if they want to cut him, you just move a different $30 million. So, like, as long as you're committed to the philosophy, once you're no longer committed to that, then it does become a hurdle because you have $30 million dead, and if you're no longer willing to move the money ahead, that's when it becomes. But if you're always willing to push it ahead and maintain this philosophy, like, there's never a true hurdle unless the cap drops like it did in 2020.
Yeah, and I always look at it like, I say this all the time, like, there's a million ways to look at it. Not every team looks at it the same way, but if you're talking about a player that you might cut, let's call it Ryan Ramczyk, let's call it Cam Jordan, the worst thing you can do is be like, no, we're going to give him $15 million more that we will have to have on our books next year just because we don't want to deal with the current cap situation. Mm-hmm. You don't pay somebody new money because you always have to pay it. And it's such a moving pot that moves from year to year or whatever. So you don't let the cap situation. Like I said, the one time I think it comes into play is it is an incentive to work out a pay cut with guys sometimes, and I bet we see that this offseason with certain players too.
All right, let's move on to the Saints' win over the Bucks. Kind of looking back a little bit and also looking forward, how can the Saints build off of Sunday's win over the Bucks and finish strong against Atlanta at home?
I mean, there was a handful of things that I liked in this game. I mean, look, offensively, like, they're blocking well, and it's the second time we've seen it in a handful of games, so that's a huge thing. I thought the few times that Derek Carr did get pressured, he handled it pretty well. Yeah, I mean, so that was a good thing for them. On defense, one of the things that it looked like they were doing a little bit different in their zone coverage is they were pattern matching instead of dropping in the zones, which I think took away some stuff. And, like, that's just basically, like, if you get vertical routes, you play man, and then if you don't, like, you're kind of dropping into the zone then. So, like, you aren't getting caught in these situations where, like, you see it with the Saints. Like, they beat teams just kind of, like, running through these zones. Like, so then if it's vertical, you basically turn into a cover one man defense, and then you have the flexibility to be zone otherwise. I thought they did that really well in this game. So just, like, a handful of things like that I think helps. And then just, you know, with that pattern matching, it helps with, like, not busting coverages when you have a bunch of new guys playing in there as replacements. So I thought DA had a really good plan. They've been blitzing well. I like the blitz plan. I like the pressure package. If you can just keep kind of doing all these things and protecting yourself from errors, I mean, it's one game left, but, like, I like the momentum.
Yeah.
You use the words build off of, though, and you just use the word momentum. I've become the biggest cynic and skeptic in the world that those things exist with the Saints because,
hey, you have a right to.
You know, a week later, like, I think to date, the Giants game a couple weeks ago was their best win of the season. And then a week later, 4 days later, the Rams loss was their worst loss of the season. I think it's been their biggest problem for 3 years now is I don't think there's any such thing as momentum or consistency with this team. I will say, though, I do think their offense has become better in the second half of the season. As I just wrote a story about Chris Olave. He's playing the best football of his career lately, which is crazy since he's doing it with a sprained ankle and the flu and a concussion. Him and Derek Carr actually have developed a better chemistry. Carr is playing better. The offensive line is playing better. My big fear in this game, though, that I don't think last week's success will translate. It's a much different offense, and this team has yet to show me they can stop the run, and they're about to face a team that ran for 228 yards against them last time. 2 weeks ago, the Rams ran for, as much as they wanted to against them. I don't love this matchup for the Saints defense. They matched up. They did a good job against Tampa Bay, but they're going to have to prove to me that they can stop a team that runs the ball as stubbornly as this team does.
Yeah, Bijan Robinson is going to be a problem. And we know that Taylor Heinicke is still kind of dealing with a little bit of an injury. We'll see if it's Taylor Heinicke or Desmond Ridder. But regardless, I think the Saints would rather face Desmond Ridder over Taylor Heinicke because Taylor Heinicke is a little bit more mobile than Desmond Ridder. We know that that has been a thorn in the Saints side all season long. But let's get into some of the playoff scenarios, just in case you guys didn't listen in to our last live show, just to make sure. Playoff scenarios. The Saints need to beat the Falcons and have Tampa lose to win the NFC South. That is still on the table. The NFC South title is still 100% on the table. The other scenario would be the Saints need to win and have Seattle and Green Bay lose to win a wild card, even if, so that's if Tampa does beat the Panthers in their last regular season finale. Again, if the Bucs beat the Panthers, the Saints need a win and have Seattle and Green Bay lose to win the wild card. The fact that it is still open is insane. But let's take a look back at the history between the Saints and the Falcons. How often has this game come down to playoff scenarios for the Saints?
You know, I was trying to think of that. It's actually not that often. It's almost like they took turns being good, even though it's such a rivalry. There are not a lot of years where they were both good in the same year, but in more recent years, when there were scenarios where you could only win six or seven games to win the NFC South, it's become a lot closer. But it's funny, as great as this rivalry has been, especially in recent years, obviously there was a year, I mean, we're looking 30 years ago where they actually played each other in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But funny enough, they've more taken turns than anything else in recent years. I can't tell you the last time. I mean, I remember it with Carolina. I remember it with Tampa. But Saints in Atlanta with the division on the line, I'm not sure I have it in my memory bank.
Yeah, I mean, so like 2 years ago, what was it? We were at Atlanta, but like the playoff implication was that San Francisco had to beat.
Yeah.
The Rams had to beat San Francisco, and then they
and
didn't.
And it was weird because remember the Rams like laid down. Yeah. Who was the player we were talking to? DeMario. We were talking with DeMario about that, and he was like, that's why I still hate the Rams. Number one, the no call. And then the one time we needed them to win, they didn't.
Yeah. So, I mean, there was that. And it was like such a scene. Like Mickey and all them are like watching the TV in the back.
They blew it.
Everybody was so frustrated. But yeah, I mean, there hasn't been a lot of them. But, you know, I don't even know how to feel about these scenarios. It feels like a long shot. You know, Tampa's probably not going to lose to the Panthers. You know, the Cardinals kind of are the strongest bird in the NFL right now after taking down the Eagles. So maybe they have a shot against the Seahawks. What was the other game?
The Bears would have to beat the Packers. The Bears would have to beat
the
Packers.
That's the most wild thing you said. How many wins do the Cardinals have this year, Nick?
I mean,
they're on a one-game win streak.
How many wins? They were a one-game win streak?
They beat the Eagles last week.
Look, you're only as good as your last game.
Yeah.
So, oh, the Saints? Oh, okay, so we're going to say that about the Saints then?
No, here's
exactly.
Here's what's interesting about this scenario. So, if the Saints win, which I still think is one of the hardest parts of this formula because of the inconsistency we just talked about. But we talked about that. So you just referenced 2 years ago, the Saints got downstairs in time to see the end of this Niners-Rams game that went right down to the wire and their fates were on the line. If the Saints win this game and Tampa Bay wins, they will have to wait for the 3:25 games. That's when the Seahawks and the Packers play. So we could have a scenario where we do all our interviews with the Saints in the locker room. We talk to Dennis Allen afterward. We talk to all the players afterward if they win this game. And they still won't know if they got into the playoffs or not. And they'll be sitting there and watch. I don't know if they'll stay in the dome and watch together, if they'll go home and then they'll reconvene. It could be really interesting that those games that decide their fate might take place in the afternoon slate when they're done.
Real quick, some breaking news. Rashid Shaheed was named to the Pro Bowl.
Oh, okay. That's huge, going on right now. Huh?
Huge vote for Rashid Shaheed. Look, I mean, to be honest, I don't know how I felt about it, if Rashid Shaheed was or wasn't. I thought it was more of a toss-up. Yeah. But credit to him and kind of the quiet season that he's had. Quiet
in
more ways than one.
I don't want to take anything away.
Of course.
I think it helps if you're a kick returner who also makes the plays he makes on offense.
Yes.
I don't know if he did this just with his kick return ability this
minus
year.
Minus the fumble to start the season.
Yeah, the fact that he's been so outstanding as a big play receiver definitely helped bring up his value. So he deserves.
Yeah, good for Rashid.
Yeah, he deserves it.
I mean, he made some wild plays. just, you know, as a reporter, I know how things work. Like signing with
people heard of him.
signing with Drew Rosenhaus as your agent helps raise your national profile and get your name out there a little bit louder. So I mean, he made all the right moves. But look, I think he's having a pretty good season. I mean, he's going to end up with 700 yards probably receiving. I mean, that's a solid year. Kick return 384, averaging 21 yards of return. Punt returns, you know, he's made some play. He had the return for a touchdown, punt return for a touchdown. So I mean, I think he's incredibly deserving of the honor.
It'd be interesting to see how he's utilized against the Atlanta Falcons. Is this going to be another one of those games where Derek Carr is just going to loft one up and kind of dare them with Rashid Shaheed and his speed? Getting back to this Saints-Falcons matchup, could this Saints team really pull off a win and keep DA further employed? Like, we know that DA is going to stick around for another year. We've been talking about that on the shows for the last few weeks. But if they get... not just if they get a convincing win against the Atlanta Falcons, what does that do for Dennis Allen moving forward?
I mean, I think it gives you a little bit of momentum going into the offseason. I think like ending this on a high note, because like last week's locker room, I think, was the most positive locker room we've been in the whole entire year. Yeah. Players felt like they were bought back in. They believed. They felt like they had a great plan. They felt like, you know, staying in it and being part of the fight, like, counted. They like going in to the final week of the season having hope alive. Win in a nice way, regardless of making the playoffs. And I think that you kind of, I think the whole city is going to feel differently, but within that locker room, I think that you just continue to harvest hope. And I think that's something that would help them quite a bit. I mean, just having the right mentality going into the offseason, because a few weeks ago, it felt like they would go into the offseason and they'd feel so snake bitten. And
yeah.
I think that's been, you know, I think you have the cure to that venom, and winning this game, I think, just kind of keeps it completely at bay.
Yeah.
Two things. First of all, we had a Pro Bowl draft this summer. I kind of think I took Rashid Shaheed.
So did
we're
going
to have to find the tape. I don't know. because I think it was like a cheat code, because I remembered the return man. I made this point with Kevin on the Members Only podcast this week. There was a question of the day where it was last week's win the best of DA's career? And we were kind of like, it's close with some other ones. But I think if you package these two together, if they beat Tampa and Atlanta the last 2 weeks after they lost to Tampa and Atlanta earlier in the season, and they were able to adjust and come back and kind of flex their muscle over those, I think that duo of wins, not to mention the fact that it would be four out of the last five games, I think that would probably be the strongest thing Dennis Allen has done as a head coach. So people will still not be happy that he stayed, the people who are already in that camp that wanted a change there. But if he finished 4-1 and he finished with two wins against the division rivals that had beat them earlier in the season, I think it would be kind of the high point of his 2 years as Saints coach. I really do.
I wonder if the Saints win and they make it into the playoffs. Let's say they win a playoff game or make the playoffs.
Wow, we're going.
How much more attractive does it make the what will be an empty Saints OC position for others that are out there kind of figuring out what their next move is?
Oh, man, if they win a playoff game, I think it makes it incredibly more attractive. I think if you just make the playoffs, it makes it more attractive, because I think then you can go out and you can shop a little bit higher up the chart, because it doesn't feel as a perilous situation. Because I think if you take that job, you're kind of doing it with the, like, okay, I'm going in, I'm going to be a mercenary, I'm going to kill it, and I'm going to do what I got to do to make sure I'm all right, but this could end at any moment. And I think when you have people that have, you know, options between jobs, stability is something that they're going to look at. But being realistic, if you're hiring an OC, like, it's kind of an unstable situation to begin with. But if you're doing it after being in the playoffs, that makes you one of the more attractive people on the market.
And the thing I just talked about too, I think the improvement of Derek Carr, the improvement of the offense, what Chris Olave's been doing this month, I think just continuing to put that on tape and give an offensive coordinator candidate, like, I got something I can maybe work with here, can only help that situation too.
Depends on how many injuries are going to be sustained throughout the week. If the Saints can have success, though, against the Falcons and keep a playoff hope alive. Very extensive injury report today. There was only two that were surprising. I'll get to those first. Juwan Johnson did not practice today, listed with a chest. We actually were able to talk with him in the locker room, and he said that has to do with the shoulder injury he sustained in the Bucs game that we knew about and he played through. The other one that was surprising is Colin Saunders. He has a concussion. He did not practice today. We did see him out there in the non-contact drills, and then he went over and started working on the bike. The other guys that we knew were not going to be practicing today: Lonnie Johnson with a continued knee injury, Alvin Kamara ankle sprain against the Bucs, Nephi Sewell, he He has the ACL tear from this weekend. And then, of course, Landon Young is dealing with a knee injury that's not as serious as Nephi Sewell's from this weekend. The other guys that were limited, Kendre Miller, Jimmy Graham for a rest day, Eric McCoy, Chris Olave, and Peyton Turner. And Peyton Turner has a little asterisk that says he is currently on injured reserve. He returned to practice. The one that probably shouldn't have been limited, but probably put him as limited because he's still coming back from that ankle injury, is Kendre Miller. Because, Mike, when you and I talked to him in the locker room, he sounded up and ready to go. He said he felt his fastest today in practice and that if it were up to him, he'd be playing Sunday.
Well, and if Alvin Kamara is not going to play, mm-hmm. it's a hugely important for him and Absolutely. For the team to take advantage of that showcase. So I hope he feels good because this is a big opportunity for him potentially.
Absolutely.
Alvin or no Alvin, I think it's important for him to get on the field yes. and just end on something. Like, man, go show yourself something going into the offseason. Just to show that you can do it to yourself, to everybody else. It's just important, I think.
For Kendre Miller, it's just been a disappointment for him. I mean, if it were up to him, he would love to be on the field and be healthy and playing this year. He was pretty emotional in the interview today, just that, look, it hasn't gone my way, and I'm getting on the field Sunday. I think, like you mentioned, he just wants to end it on a high note. But we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to go around the NFC South. We're going to be talking about Bijan Robinson as well and so much more right after this quick break.
Tis the season for Gumbo Combos at New Orleans Hamburger and Seafood Company. Enjoy our hot gumbo, fries, and your choice of shrimp, catfish, soft-shell crab, or frog legs starting at $9.99. That's right, $9.99 at New Orleans Hamburger and Seafood Company.
No loan payments for 90 days with local financing from Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union on your next auto, boat, RV, ATV, or motorcycle. That's right, no loan payments for 90 days when you close your loan by December 31st. Jefferson Financial offers easy-to-use online applications, fast decisions, and local personalized service. The financial products you want with the convenience you deserve. We are Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. Apply online at jeffersonfinancial.org. Federally insured by NCUA.
At Toro, we were born for moments like this. From bringing new bundles of joy into the world to delivering what new mothers need to stay healthy. Born to keep hearts beating strong. And to keep seniors active and healthy for years to come. Because at Turo, we deliver more than babies. From heart care to cancer care, and newborns to seniors, at Turo, we're born to care.
Hey, Brad, I got you something I think you're really going to like for your gift this year.
What? Is this one of those Martin's exclusive bourbon bottles?
Picked it out just for you.
Maya, this is awesome. But I think you're going to love the gift I got you a little bit more.
Wow. Mega Wine generic brand vodka. Brad, you shouldn't have.
Not to mention it.
No, Brad, you shouldn't have.
Look, small batch, smooth, soft spice.
Mm-hmm. I'll take a New Orleans Saints scratcher. Play New Orleans Saints from the lottery. Just scratch, fold, and punch your way to winnings. Punch your ticket with New Orleans Saints. Win up to $100,000. Enter our second chance drawings, giving you a season to smile.
Welcome back to the Turo Hospital Studio. Time now for our money segment presented by Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. Did the Saints find something in their young secondary this weekend in Tampa Bay?
Maybe a little bit. I mean, I think it was kind of just back to what they were doing, but I liked how Jonathan Abram played.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, just a playmaker. I mean, obviously there were some downs within it, but like you can live with the downs with those kind of ups. So I thought they found something with him. I mean, I thought Alante Taylor got back on track. So I think they really found something there, pulling him out, putting him back in the game, seeing how he responded to it. I thought that was a huge moment for him. Outside guys played well. Like I said, they did some stuff with their scheme that I thought helped a little bit. So yeah, maybe a little bit. I mean, again, though, throwing it back to the first topic, like I'm a little worried that they're like, well, we've been 17 games without Marshawn over the last 2 years, and we've been solid. And I bet the numbers bear out that they're a pretty good secondary in those games. But I don't buy it. I'm not a believer, even though I think we have like a full season of evidence without him over the last 2 years.
I was surprised that Alante Taylor had his first career interception. I know that that's the stat, but it was almost like it took this long to get here.
He dropped six last year.
He was supposed to be splash guy in the defense that was supposed to have these crazy numbers and things like that. Yes, he's playing a totally new position this year at slot corner. Dennis Allen has continued to say it has kind of been a rough patch for him, trying to figure out how to play in space and figure out where his help is at. We've seen that on tape, but the fact that Alante Taylor finally got that pick, handled pressure relatively well with Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. They were pushing on him a little bit. He did not fold. He didn't let his emotions overcome him. Thought he played a really good game.
I thought it was a vital performance for them after that Rams game. That Rams game was so bad that it kind of undermined the whole first 15 weeks of the season. It was like, wait a minute, was this a mirage? And so for them to bounce back against a really good receiver duo and Mike Evans and Chris Godwin and Baker Mayfield, who'd been playing so hot, I thought it was really important to be like, no, we are the sort of alpha position group of this team that we thought we were. And Nick talked to Tyrann Mathieu afterward, and I wrote about it in the Fallout column on Monday. It was, you know, they recognize in all the games we've won this year, we've kind of set the tone in the secondary. And when we've let up, the team's let up. And it's uncanny. I mean, you look at their 8 wins, it's all either like multiple turnovers by the defense or the, you know, the other team throwing for 150 yards or less. And this was another one. They really do set the tone for this team, even without Marshon Lattimore out there.
Secondary played well. What about the front seven? That will be the moment of the week presented by New Orleans Hamburger and Seafood Company. Will they be able to stop this young running back in Bijan Robinson?
It's the question of the game. Maybe the question of the season, depending on what happens in other games.
Right.
And I'm skeptical. They didn't play Atlanta in the middle of the season. They didn't play Atlanta early in the season. They didn't play Atlanta when they were hurt. They played Atlanta coming off a bye week with their season on the brink and a pretty healthy team. And they just got run over from start to finish. I mean, Atlanta spent the whole fourth quarter running over the Saints. There was nothing they could do about it. I actually thought it was sort of like the most deflating loss of the season that kind of like ended my hopes for this team. And it was just a crucially important game, and they had no answers for a team that they knew was going to run on every down and was going to run from start to finish and doesn't have much of a passing game to speak of. So have they fixed that in the last 5 weeks? I really don't know if they have.
Yeah, look, I think one thing that helps is I think if Jonathan Abram plays, that's a big help in the run game. He's really good against the run in this last game. Had a couple tackles. I thought he just crashed really well. Made a probably more dynamic in that aspect than we've seen a lot of these guys be this season.
Put him with Zach Bond and Jimmy Graham as sort of an indictment. They didn't use him more earlier this year.
I don't know, because like the coverage I think is spotty, but like he is really good playing downhill. And if you can find a way to use him in that spot, I mean, it's huge. The thing that I think hurts is if Colin Saunders, this concussion lingers into the game, I think that's a big deal.
It's something to pay aspect. attention to.
He had like 3 stops last week, so he played pretty good. But I'm not a believer. I'm not a believer in the run defense. Like we saw a game. You know, like it's one. Like, okay, you guys decided to play better today. Can you do it again? Like, I don't buy it at this point in the season.
I think they could be a little more dominant, especially if it's Desmond Ridder. Like, just don't let him get comfortable. If you could just hold him to 150 rushing yards instead of 228 and force a turnover against this quarterback, it's still possible. But they're not going to shut down their run game like they did against Tampa. I don't see that.
Yeah, there's a few things that are hard to believe in with this team. Can Derek Carr change his own narrative with another strong performance next week?
I think he already kind of has. I think he already kind of has a little bit. I mean, like the red zone is not an issue anymore. It's not.
It's crazy.
Like he already changed his narrative. Like it's changed. He's had a handful of decent games. Like
handling the pressure to me was the biggest hurdle that we saw in Tampa Bay, that it was like, oh, red zone, you can add that to it as well.
If he can do that consistently, like absolutely. But here's the thing. Like, I think he's kind of gotten to like that average level. So like when we say change the narrative, like I thought the narrative early on was like, oh man, like this is bad. Like it's not. And I think he's found a way to get to that like average mark. Like I'm not heralding him as a long-term solution. I'm not heralding him as the savior. I'm not heralding him as, you know, Drew 2 or anything like that. Like he's just fine. Like he's fine right now. He's just, you know, he's inoffensive. Yeah. Like he's just, you know, he's a piece of chicken with like a little seasoning, but like not enough. And it's like, it's fine. Like you can eat it and it's kind of unremarkable, but like you don't go home and complain about it. It's just like, yeah, I ate, you know? So I think Derek's like at that level right now, which is solid. Like, I think he's solid.
Wait,
right now.
You used a lot of
a lot of words.
A lot going
but we
on.
Have a line. We have a line around here, and it's called the Dalton Bridgewater line that we've seen in this offense in the past. Is he equal to the Dalton Bridgewater line, or has he actually surpassed the Dalton Bridgewater line?
Don't make me like speak in public about how I feel about it. Look, love the guy. Think he's great. I think Teddy was like the most overrated player in Saints history. Like, bar none. Like, not even close. Like, go watch the film. Like, there's so many missed throws. Like, he's better than Teddy was. And I know Teddy won games and people are going to say all that, but like, if you gave Carr, Prime Mike, and Prime Sean, like, I think it looks a lot different. And Teddy got it done, but like, you know, people liked him. Like, that's a big factor in it. And Andy Dalton's bad in the fourth quarter. Like, I think he's like probably. Like, I think him and Andy are probably
similar. They were chicken with no
similar.
Seasoning, and he's chicken with a little seasoning. So he's above there.
Yeah, I mean, they're fine. They're fine. Yeah. You know, there's a reason, though, that, like, you know, Teddy left him was never a starter. I mean, it's just, it's empirical evidence. I mean, it just is what it is.
Look, you asked that question. I mean, we're going to spend 8 months trying to hype ourselves up about a team that's going to have the same coach and the same quarterback. Mm-hmm. And we will. We will get there. There'll be a lot of talk about year two. First of all, what's interesting is Derek Carr has phenomenal numbers in year two of every system he's ever been in. He's struggled in year one. He's done better in year two. The question is, will it be the same system? Or will it be another year one situation? But it can only get better. I mean, all this stuff, this was a big part of that story I wrote about with Olave, is they can practice. They can look great on the practice field, but they're practicing against sort of a known commodity. And then they see a defense do something they didn't practice. And Olave did this, and he did this. And it's like, all right, next time we see that, let's do it. They said there's some things you can only learn from games together. So it will get better as there's more time. And the fact that it's gotten better in the second half of the season, I don't think is a fluke.
The question is, will Lou Hedley get better? You said that Derek Carr is fine. Is Lou Hedley fine or better than fine based on what we've seen?
He's not better. I mean, he ranks basically dead last in net punting average in the NFL. Yeah. Not in everything. No, not in everything. He's fifth in the league in punts inside the 20. I don't really know what that means, but I mean, the one thing about Lou Hedley is his net punting average and his punting average are very close, because he is actually, like, there's only 151 return yards this whole season through over 15. It's 10 return yards a game. That was their plan.
Yeah.
His punts don't get returned, but they don't go very far either. So I think he might be a one and done punter.
I'm going to introduce a whole new topic right here.
Oh,
I'm
going
to throw it to you. So do they have the win they need right now to have the playoffs secured
if
they pick Will Lutz instead of Blake Groupie?
I mean, it's hard to not look at the Green Bay loss and think a veteran in that situation might have had better success. I think back to, was it the extra point of the field goal that Will Lutz missed at the beginning of Denver's season.
I mean, they
lost that
multiple
game.
Multiple kicks, and they lost by a point or whatever. And so they both have one loss on their ledger.
And I think about that, but
most percentage is better.
Mike and I actually were talking about that. I think all three of us from about this when we were walking back from the locker. Or no, Mike and I were talking about it. I think if you were going to move on from your vets, Blake Gillikin and Will Lutz, you had to make a big splash with these young guys, and they just haven't.
Yeah.
I think they're probably looking back and kicking themselves for making the bold move that didn't turn out the way they thought. I truly think that it's a slim margin, but that slim margin, they made the wrong choice.
So, I mean, look, I think Blake will probably, I think Blake's been solid, and they'll probably get better as time goes on. But like, in just the short term 1 year window, like, as far as like, would that be the difference in making it? Like, it's definitely possible. I mean, there's a handful, and it's just like his percentage is a little bit better.
Yeah.
It's a very fair question. And I think we were all kind of leaning toward Lutz, but we saw, I mean, he had that really, really bad practice at the end. Like, it really felt like the competition was almost getting to him. Kudos to him for the great season. He's made 88% of his field. Yeah. I actually meant to look, was he the AFC Pro Bowl kicker? I know he's a candidate for it.
I'll check it out.
But he has missed a couple extra points. I mean, surprisingly enough, Groupie has missed 7 kicks this year, and Lutz has missed 6 kicks this year, if you include extra points. I think we thought Lutz was going to have a better season than Groupie. Some of the arguments with Groupie was going younger and cheaper.
Justin Tucker still
Justin Tucker. Yeah, he got it.
Did Morstead get the punter?
Did Morstead.
No, he didn't.
No, he did not. AJ Cole with the
but Raiders. The point being that Lutz has made one more kick than Groupie this year. I think we thought Lutz was going to be a little better.
It's such
I
a think slim margin.
The pro
margin.
Groupie argument was the people who wanted to go younger and cheaper. But I know I like the idea of sticking with the known commodity, yeah. But I don't know if you can put the whole season on him. But yeah, I mean, that Green Bay
game.
Not the
whole season. It's just like, would this one decision have like flipped it a little bit? Like, no, look, I think he's had a good season. Like, I think he's good. Yeah. Like, for a rookie kicker, he's good. He's solid. And I think consistency will come with time. And, you know, I think he found a way to get more consistent. Like, when he's going out there, I don't think he's going to miss a kick.
That's
you know
a better
I mean?
Question. That's a better question. Do you think Groupie should be or will be their kicker next year? And do you even let him run unopposed for that job next year? Or do you think he's the one in the competition for his life next year?
It's hard to say. I think that they'll probably go with Blake Groupie next year, but I wouldn't be surprised if they bring in some competition. But he's probably going to win that battle in training camp next year.
I agree. I think they compete, but yeah. I think he wins, and I think he should win, and I think he should be their kicker. Like, I'm not crapping on the guy here. Like, I think he's had
it's
a good
slim.
Season.
It's just a slim margin. Yeah.
It's just hard not to look back at this guy that you cut had a better season than the guy you kept. I mean, it's just kind of, no question. It just is what it is.
All right, before we go around the NFC South, last topic here. Are we concerned with the depth at right tackle? Let's say the Saints are in the playoffs. Outside of Ryan Ramczyk and Landon Young, who are both out with injuries right now, Cam Irving and then who else? Cam Irving is going to be the starting right tackle this weekend, but who is his backup?
Is it James Hurst?
James Probably. Hurst is...
And then Max Garcia moves to left guard because James Hurst has played a lot of right tackle in the past.
You're moving a guy, though, from the starting lineup and over and then
and
adding in somebody else,
in the
and
mix,
it's just...
But, boy, talk about a draft pick that we haven't mentioned that has not gotten on the field despite all these... Nick Saldivari.
Isn't he on IR?
Is he?
Yeah.
Well, then he's not in the mix. Yeah. No wonder we haven't talked about him. But, I mean, he was when he was healthy earlier, we didn't talk about him. But, yeah, so there's no obvious answer the depth at right tackle. I mean, they have a couple guys on the practice squad, but I almost think Hurst would be the next guy there because there's so many other guys that have played guard this season for them.
Yeah, it's just like it kind of feels like, you know, undoing the Jenga tower and trying to like stack things and hope everything stays together. But
that's
I agree.
The one I think that could make this just crumble.
Oh, absolutely.
I do like Cam Irving as much as I like Landon Young, though. We mentioned that. I did speak to Landon Young today, by the way. He said it's a little better than the one he had this summer because they were able to treat it right away. It didn't have the same amount of swelling and fluid in it. So there's still some hope that if he's not going to play this week, but if there is a playoff run, that he could be a part of it. But for this week, it's stay healthy, Cam Irving.
Yeah, we are going to get into the matchups and who Cam Irving is likely going to be up against in our Friday matchup show. All right, let's go around the NFC South. Things still aren't good with the Panthers. Surprise. They got shut out by the Jags last week. Their owner's still under. No, this is a new thing. I was talking about the Falcons owner under fire. The Panthers owner is under fire because he threw a drink at a fan.
300,000.
There's video of it. It's insane.
Not a good look.
Not a good look.
You can't
at
be
all.
The guy that's like firing your coach every year and then like throwing stuff at people in the stands. You just can't. You can't have all that going on.
It's a really bad
Pepper's
look.
Tripping.
Yeah, they do have the number one overall pick in the draft, but it's not even theirs. It's going to the Chicago Bears.
I would throw a drink. I would throw a drink if I realized that.
It's all bad.
bad. All right, the Falcons are coming off a loss to the Bears, and it looks like Taylor Heinicke is back to being the starter, but he is dealing with an ankle injury. He's questionable to play. We talked about that earlier in the show, but does it matter which quarterback starts, Desmond Ridder or Taylor Heinicke? What's the advantage either way?
You know, one, you've seen one this year. You haven't seen the other one, I guess. So, I mean, like maybe it's better just to go with the guy you already seen and you know how to prepare against him and you know what to do. But I mean, I don't think it really makes that much of a difference. Like both these guys are pretty mid.
Bucks, on the other hand.
No, I have a Falcons question.
Oh, let's go.
Is Arthur Smith in trouble if they lose, do you think?
It's a weird situation.
No?
I mean, Ian said
four
no.
out
Ian
of five.
No. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. Yeah. Ian said no.
Yeah.
But wouldn't you think his seat would be much hotter than Dennis Allen's?
Or Schefter said no. Schefter said that they were both safe. That's who it was. Schefter said they were both safe, Ian and Arthur Smith.
You got to be sick if you're a Falcons fan. I'd imagine.
The only difference there is Arthur Smith has had one more year than
that's what I mean. Why would his seat not be harder?
The only difference is they did full rebuild in his first year. They traded away Matt Ryan. Julio Jones caught up with the salary cap. So they were kind of like, hey, we're starting from scratch with you, which buys you more time. But if it buys you 4 years, I think he could use a win to make sure that's ink and not pencil.
Yep, I agree.
The Bucks need a win. If the Bucks beat the Panthers, that's it. NFC South champs. They've got the title for the third straight year. Bucks quarterback's a little bit injured, though. I don't think we talked about that on our last show. What happened with Tyrann Mathieu and Baker Mayfield?
Tyrann put a clean hit on him.
Clean?
Clean. Oh, clean. Yeah, definitely okay. Clean. It definitely was a clean hit. It was a clean hit, for real. He just gave it. He was outside of the pocket running, and he lit him up. It was a clean hit, though. I mean, there's really nothing. I'd be surprised if he gets fined for it. I really would. I mean, I think it was a good, clean hit.
Do we think that could potentially – is Baker still going to play Sunday?
Probably. Yeah. But, I mean, it'd be better for the Saints.
I know. It'd be better for the Saints. It'd be better for the Panthers if Andy Dalton probably got the start.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Do they make that move?
No. I don't. They won't make that move unless Bryce Young's injury is the reason.
Okay. We'll see what happens. Well, we will be back on Friday with our live matchup show. You won't want to miss that. We will also have plenty more on NewOrleans.football. And if you haven't noticed, we got the Jordy Collada show now on NOF. So be sure to watch them live tomorrow morning and as well as Friday morning. I believe they have a Monday through Friday live morning show from 7 to 9 o'clock. And then, of course, breaking news happens with LSU. They're right on it, and they're going live as well. So we're trying to bring you guys the best Saints and LSU coverage in Louisiana. No doubt. And we appreciate you guys for supporting us. We'll see you next time.
Yeah, that was great research on the NFC South, too. Tremendous job.
See you guys later.